Hey, what's up, everybody? It's your boy, Christopher Terrence Jones. Welcome to another episode of the Christopher Terrence Jones Show. Can we talk? Hey, you know what to do right now. Go ahead and share this podcast. Don't keep it to yourself. I promise you, you don't want to keep it to yourself. Thank you guys for supporting and following and listening. I really appreciate each and every one of you. You guys are amazing. But we got some great news, so let's just dive right in. Congratulations to Joe Biden, who is our new president-elect. You guys turned out, you voted, and we are on the brink of having a new president. Donald Trump is out. It is time to party. I don't know about y'all, but I am so excited. This is like, wow. We've been in hell for 4 years. And I was sitting here, tears begin to flow. Y'all know I cry about everything. But that really just had me in utter tears. And I was like, oh my God, this really is happening. But what made it all so much better is that you guys felt the same way. Within hours of it being called on Saturday morning, when they said the new president-elect Joe Biden, across the country, y'all catch that? People began to come out. D.C., people got in front of the White House and there was just one big old party. Los Angeles, New York, oh my God, here, Oakland, the lake was lit, baby. It was lit. People were blowing horns and it was just like, get emotional again. Y'all know we needed to be saved. We were about to lose everything. If we would have had 4 more years of that idiot in the office, we would have lost everything. And we needed to be saved. And Joe Biden came in and he saved us. You guys voted. Y'all did some amazing things. Pennsylvania, blue. Wow. Blue. Wow. Blue. Y'all came on and turned on over Georgia. You guys made history since the 90s. I want to say it's 1992 was the last time that Georgia was blue. But you guys made it blue. And you know, we cannot not say thank you to the people on the ground who have been working in Georgia to get people registered. Y'all registered almost 1 million voters, and it might be over 1 million. Stacey Abrams, when they had counted you out, you didn't give up. You fought. And you knocked on doors. Oh my God. Just freaking amazing. Stacey Abrams got out there. And y'all know I love me some Stacey Abrams. I love it. I love the fact that when she talked half the time, I got to go and get to Google and figure out what it was, the word was she just said. Be like, okay, that's what that mean? Wow. But the celebrations, they're still continuing. But we got to remember now, we can't stop. Georgia needs our help right now. We have to make sure that you guys come back out. January, I think it's the 5th in Georgia, they're going to have a runoff. And we need Reverend Raphael Warnock. And the other guy's name is Ossoff. Y'all know I jack up people's names all the time. So I'll never be like, oh yeah, you'll get it right. But they're in a runoff. And we need for you guys to vote blue. Vote blue because there's a chance that we could take the Senate and we could be in control of the Senate, which would be an amazing thing. It would be an amazing thing because I still don't understand how 71 million people voted for Trump. We still live in a time where there is still so many racist people here. There's nothing you can say to me that will help me understand how you say you're not a racist and you don't like you like other nationalities and you're all right with it, but you voted for a man whose whole campaign was Mexicans are murderers and rapists. Coronavirus is from China. Just derogatory statements. And white women, after he said, grab him by the you know what, y'all still voted for him. I don't get that. There's no way. You cannot be a racist. And I said this the other day on Facebook. How can you call yourself a Christian and support someone who goes against what the Bible says? Are you reading the Bible? The Bible says God is all about love. Love thy neighbor. But you guys just have hate in your heart. That's all that's in your heart. Hate and rage. That's crazy for you to call yourself a Christian. And then what's even more crazy is that you call yourself a Christian, but you don't go to church. So that's probably why you can do what you do, because you're not applying any of the Bible's applications into your life. So I'm like, that is just, it's really sad. It really, really is sad. And what is supposed to be now, supposed to be this joyous time for us, and it's still a happy time for me. It's sad to see that this man, Donald Trump, has you guys believing that he has won. He's tweeting that he has won. He's tweeting that the is rigged. But wait a minute. So this is my question. If this whole situation is rigged and we did election fraud, please tell me why we didn't get rid of Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham. Why didn't we take out all the Republicans? If we rigged it, you know, this is what we're going to do. If we're going to rig it, we're going for the full money, baby. We're going for everything. We're going for the whole gusto. But when Hillary lost in 2016, she conceded. She didn't come back and say, when we knew that Russia had interfered with the election and Russia helped put this fool in office. She conceded. She didn't come back and say, let's do another recount. I should be there, blah, 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 blah. She didn't keep going on and on. She did what she had to do, concede, and she moved on. But this fool won't do it. So, unfortunately, I'm sorry. I'm like Whoopi Goldberg now. Y'all got to suck it up. We sucked it up and put up with him for 4 years. And the best way I can say that, he will be forever remembered as a one term impeached president who was voted by the people the worst president ever in history. That gives me such sweet peace to know that we do not have to endure another 4 years of this idiot in office doing the stupidest stuff, saying the stupidest stuff, and we can move on with our lives, and hopefully we can begin to build the country and get rid of some of this hate. But some of y'all are going to just be like that forever. But my desire is that you change and we move on. So, happy about that. Happy, happy. Let me tell y'all, other stuff has been going on. So, besides the election, y'all know Jason Momoa, that fine man. Whew. Oh my God. He came out and said that after he was on Game of Thrones, after he died, he was in some serious debt. And that caused him and his wife, Lisa Bonet, you guys remember her from Cosby, they were basically starving. He had a lot of debt. And so when his character went down, it was rough. He said it was really challenging. I couldn't get work. And when you have babies and you're completely in debt, you know? He said he already knew his situation improved not too long after when he was cast in Justice League as Aquaman. So y'all know he came in Aquaman and y'all fell in love with him all over again. I never watched Game of Thrones, so I didn't get the gist of what Game of Thrones was about. But maybe I'll check it out. You know, everything is on. Well, maybe it's not on Netflix. Who knows? But what I like about Jason Momoa and Lisa Bonet is that her children from her first husband, Lenny Kravitz, which is just another fine specimen. Y'all know he's just amazingly fine. Y'all saw that body on the cover of that magazine. Oh, he just puts all of us to shame. But they have the perfect relationship as a family, a blended family. And they really hang out. They spend time together. So that's just an amazing thing. And we need that in this world, because we know that when celebrities get divorced, it just goes so bad. It really, really just goes so bad. Or, you know, when your family member got divorced, your mama and your daddy, and they throwing stuff and can't stand each other every 5 minutes. Oh, my God. It's just horrible. So, kudos to them for making the blended family work. And I'm so glad that Jason Momoa got another gig. Y'all, I hope and pray that with this pandemic going on, that it doesn't take them right back, because we in the middle of crazy, you know. And it feels like we're about to shut back down again. But we'll talk about that later. Y'all, I am older. We all know that. Kylie Jenner just put a picture up, and I saw this on Page Six. She put a picture up with her face made up and looking like she just got a boob job. I was so shocked, because I guess I never paid attention before. This girl is 23. Why do you look like an old woman? Why are you looking like you're 40? Nothing about that picture says 23. Nothing. I looked at the picture several times. I was like, my God. So she has on this body hugging outfit. And Caitlyn Jenner said stunning. And, you know, commented on this Instagram thing. And I'm sitting here looking like, what's stunning about your 23-year-old looking like they 40? Because the spray tanning, the makeup, and all of that got you looking older than what you are. Why are we in such a rush to be older than what we are? Because there's going to be a time when you're going to need Botox. Because, see, you don't have that good skin. You're going to need some help. Take your time. Live your life. Why are you so much makeup at 23? It's just, it looks horrible. I don't know. To me, it just looks horrible. But I know who looks good. I know who looks good. Y'all, Instagram be lit, y'all. You just gotta watch it. So, Mark Wahlberg, y'all know him. He decided he wanted to flash his abs. So he pulled up his shirt. And then unfortunately he turned around and showed the world the crack of his you-know-what derriere. But this was all for municipal underwear. It's a sport utility gear and apparel line. So y'all check them out, municipal, on Instagram. Y'all know Mark Wahlberg has the body that, you know, just he falls into that. Yes, fine. I'm fine. Yes, I know I'm fine. Yeah, he falls in there. So anything he's selling, y'all, you know, I had to go over here and look at municipal and be like, now I ain't got that kind of body he got, but, you know, I'm a little thick so I can put something on and wear it and it'll still look good on me. You know how we do. We make stuff work for us. So, y'all check that out. Y'all can go to Instagram and see that. And I promise you, you will not be disappointed. Oh, and he's 49 years old. So, when he pulled down his shorts, he had on these camouflage boxer briefs. And showcasing that amazing chest. It's just chiseled. But I'm a little confused. When he turned around, there was little red spots on his back. I don't know what that was. I'm just a little, confused. I was like, It's like somebody put some like circle things on his back. But y'all can look at that and figure out whatever it is. Because I didn't know what it was. Once again, it's time for the Soul Train Awards. You guys been listening to music. We've been stuck in the house. What y'all been listening to? Her. We all love her. Vallejo, California, Bay Area zone. We love her. She is racking up. She's leading with 8 nominations for the BET Annual Soul Train Awards, which is going to air on Thanksgiving weekend, November 29th at 8 p.m. So make sure that you're there so you can watch that. Look, ain't nothing else going on. Chris Brown is the runner-up among nominees with 7. Followed by Beyonce and Young Thug with 6. Chloe times Halle. Summer Walker and Usher with 5 apiece. YG landed 4 nominations. And Brandy and PJ Morton come up with 3 each. So, you know it's going to be a great show. Once again, they've asked the amazing Tisha Campbell and Tashina Arnold to return as the host. You know, this is like the 3rd time, I think, hosting. So, it's going to be on BET, BET Her, VH1, and MTV2. So, y'all, you don't want to miss that. Make sure you check that out. I'm wondering what stunt Tashina and Tisha are going to come up with for this time. And there's so many things out there. You know, I'm proud of The Weeknd. I like The Weeknd. I like The Weeknd. His album is really cool. He is nominated for the Album of the Year. The Best New Artist. I've been listening to this girl on SiriusXM. And I tell you, y'all know I jack up names. But I think it's Snow Algebra. I like her. Oh my God. I really, 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 really like her. I love her music. So I'm just juiced about that. The gospel, the award for best gospel is always the same. You know, it's always one of the big name artists there. So, you know, it's going to be the same old, but I'm just juiced. You know, we needed something to lift us up. But now that Joe Biden is the new president-elect, everything is starting to turn. So we are on an upturn, baby. We are about to turn this up. So, historically black colleges were our new vice president-elect. Vice President Harris. It sounds so wonderful. She went to Howard University, an historical black college. We'll get this out. Get this, you guys. After nearly 20 years, Morris Brown is going to be accredited again. Their application was approved, and that means they get their accreditation back, which is a major thing when you go to a college. And it was revoked due to debit and financial mismanagement many, many years ago. But they are on the way back. Morris Brown was founded in Atlanta in January of 1881. Whew. Get this. Y'all know my aunt is a AME pastor. So, of course, I had to know about this. They have been closely affiliated with the African Methodist Episcopal Church, AME, the first black religious denomination in the country. Ain't that something? So they had a bunch of financial issues, which led to them losing their accreditation in 2002. And it just was all bad. So what it means for you, so you get the understanding of what happens there, is that once they're no longer accredited, students cannot receive federal financial aid. That immediately says, without financial aid, I can't go to the school because I can't afford to pay for this on my own. So that led to enrollment dropping down to less than 10% almost immediately. And then they thought the school was going to shut its doors, compounded by $30 million worth of debt. They filed for bankruptcy in 2012. The debt was erased, but the school then owed the AME church $4 million, which was forgiven by the church in January of 2020. Ain't that something? So now, with the accreditation back, pack your bags, people. Time to go to school. Support our own schools. Get in our own schools. Help them build back up. That's where you want to be. Because it's something about that college experience that at a black college is totally different than what you will receive anywhere else. It's just, it's an awesome experience. I wish my parents would have drilled in me, go to college, and not go to a college that wasn't. You know, I decided to go to local college here, and then I ended up going to University of Phoenix. But going to a black college, it just would have been a whole different experience. Because y'all know, y'all all watched Drumline. Everybody saw that. And by the time you saw Drumline, you was like juiced. Y'all saw, what was that? A Different World. I was like, wow, I should have did that. That would have been an amazing experience to go to a black college. The drill team. The football games. Just so many things that were missed out on because it wasn't inspired by my parents. So if I can inspire somebody else, education is a very important thing. You really want to make sure that you don't let it pass you. You grab it by the horns and you ride that bad boy out. It may be rough, but I promise you, it's worth it in the end. It's worth it. It will change your entire life. Never let nobody tell you that it's not worth it, because it really is. We come up on that time where I just want to make some honorable mentions. And Ruby Bridges, everybody remembers her. 1960. Well, some of you young people may not. She made an historic walk into, when I think about it, it's the iconic picture. It is an iconic picture that, I don't know, maybe you guys may not remember this, but Lucille Bridges and her 6-year-old daughter, Ruby Bridges, in 1960, walked into a segregated New Orleans public school. And at that time, blacks were not allowed in the school. She had to be escorted into the school, escorted out of the school. Somebody stayed with her the whole entire time. She was 6 years old. She was a little girl. And that picture, Norman Rockwell made this a famous picture for y'all to remember it. Well, her mother passed away. Lucille Bridges passed away. She was a civil rights icon. She fought for her child to get somewhere. Even though she knew that it was going to be a dangerous situation, she still fought for her child. And that started the process of desegregation of schools. So our prayers go out to Ruby and the loss of her mother, Lucille. And she's the mother of the civil rights movement. She said, Ruby said, "Today our country lost a hero. Brave, progressive, a champion for change. She helped alter the course of so many lives by setting me out on a path as a 6-year-old little girl." And so Lucille had gave birth to Ruby the same year as the landmark decision of Brown versus Board of Education to end racial segregation in schools. And like I say, Norman Rockwell did a famous painting. "The Problem We All Live With" is the title of that. So you guys can check that out. When you're in D.C., go to the museum. Support our Black Museum. Go there. I promise you, you will see some stuff that just changes everything. Know your history. Know your history. People fought for us to be where we are. You do not want to sit back and not continue the fight that the people did for you. To sit back and be lazy and do nothing. Because sometimes some of y'all do that. I don't know why. I really don't know why. I don't. But Lucille had 5 children. Her husband died in 1978. She was 86 years old. So rest in peace. As we step into this next chapter of American history, Lucille, you will not be forgotten, because we have a woman that is a person of color inside the office right now. So you'll never be forgotten. Your fight will not be in vain. We are grateful for all that you did. We're grateful for all those who fought so that we can get to where we are today. We've come a long way, but we still have a long ways to go. So y'all keep fighting. I'm going to take a quick break and we're going to come back. As you know, you got to make sure you get that commercial in there. So if you haven't done so, make sure you go right now. Share the podcast. Share the podcast. Follow me on Instagram, Mr. Chris T. Jones Show. I'll be back. Hey, we're back. So, I was looking for something that would just encourage and motivate you guys. I love a good article, something that I've read and I could tell you guys about. And I came across a post in the Huffington Post personals. And it's about a young man named Donnie, or DJ, short for Donnie Jr. Pearson, who was born in Minneapolis. He attended Robbinsdale Cooper High School. So, I just want to tell you a little bit about this story, about this person, this article I read. I grieve the absence of my blackness. Now I want to make my black vote matter, is the title. How do we begin to mend not only the things that I have experienced, but the entire 400 years of intergenerational trauma I have inherited? So the story goes a little bit like this. The writer says, I had just turned 22 when I received a call from my maternal grandmother telling me that my father had passed away and I was the next of kin. I rushed through my final exams and returned home to Minneapolis to be overwhelmed by all the responsibilities that came with his death. I spent the next several weeks cleaning out his apartment downtown with the last person on this earth I choose for that task, my mother. My father wasn't very involved in my life, and his side of the family, my black family, was entirely absent from my life. When I was a child, I was raised by my white mother and her side of the family. After my parents split up when I was a baby, neither of them ever had anything nice to say about the other. In fact, they'd rather not have spoken about or to each other at all, or made eye contact. Even something as a minor as a phone call, where one of them asked the other if they could speak with me, was always accompanied by an uncomfortable hostility. So, his father passes away. He goes there to where his dad is from, and I'm sure now you guys have the gist that the young man's father is black, but his mother is white, so he's a biracial child. The father wasn't there around much, and stay with me. There's a story here. There is a story there. I'm going to jump on ahead because I want y'all to get some other stuff, because I really want you guys to check out this article and, you know, read it for yourself and get to the gist of where it is. So I'm going to skip all the way over here. It wasn't until after my father passed that I really thought hard about my regrets regarding our relationship. Because now they were things that could never be. Those feelings were amplified by finding his fishing rods, tackle boxes, and old baseball mitts. Remnants of all the time we promised to spend together, but now never could. The list of regrets to continue to grow as I got older. I wish I could have shown him Black Panther, so that he might have had hope that young black kids would have heroes to look up to. I wish I could have listened to Kendrick Lamar's albums, the Black Panther soundtrack, Good Kid, M-A-A-D, City. Damn, I don't know what that is, y'all. With him, whenever I get asked whether I want kids, I feel like my heart is being ripped from my chest, dragged along a floor of jagged glass and left to rot with the mice carcasses that littered his apartment. I don't know what kind of father I'd be. And in many ways, I didn't have one. Let's jump on over here. I'm jumping because I want y'all to just get some bits and pieces. I wanted to not look like my black father. Growing up biracial in white suburbia was complicated. It was always a balancing act of being too black or too white, or not black or not white enough. It could be small things like having one of the counselors at my high school spend a year confusing me with another biracial student, or having people argue in history class if I counted as 4/5 of a person because I inherited 3/5 of one half of my personhood from my dad and one half of my personhood from my mom. Sometimes it was getting into physical fights. Sometimes it meant being 16 and my grandma telling me the story of how she set my mother down and told her she didn't think dating a black man was a good idea because mixed race children would be a mistake and they would have it rough, and all the other problems she foresaw. Going through my father's apartment made me sad, but also it made me mad because I missed out on learning about who I am and where I come from. But the thing that infuriated me the most while I was cleaning out his place was the amount of political campaign mail he had and the I voted sticker I found affixed to the back of his wallet. And when I learned that even though he was destitute, he was still donating to political causes. My dad had so much hope for a system that betrayed and hated him simply because of the color of his skin. He was defeated by this world, a world in which he was routinely harassed by police, security guards, and shop owners, where this kind of man was constantly suspected of being a criminal simply because of his blackness. So, in this story, in this article, I found myself in it. I found myself in a place where so many emotions begin to run back through my mind. In 2014, I lost my dad. But before that, you know, we've had the worst relationship of life. The worst relationship of life. We have battled, we have gone back and forth where we would never talk to each other, the whole thing. And in this article, his father died penniless, broken, and all alone. In my world, my dad died a multimillionaire. Through cancer. Cancer took him out of here. That's why I say we need to work on stuff that matters and stop donating money to other stuff. But that's not here. My father and I had this relationship that was just always combative. And I remember I must have been like 8 or 9. I told my mother that I did not believe that this man was my father. And I just said, I went to her. She was in the bed. And I got on the side of the bed. And I asked her, was he my father? Because the way that he treated me and the way that he treated his other kids, it was totally different. And a child just knows. And I knew. But my mother said, no, he's your father. That's just crazy. I don't know what you're talking about. Well, 10, 20, maybe 25 years later, my mother drops by my house one day. She's coming from church, and I guess she got convicted. And my mother came to my house, and she decided she wanted to purge everything. And the words out of her mouth was, I wasn't sure your father was your father. Because when I got pregnant with you, your dad and I were not together. Your dad was with somebody else, and I was with somebody else. So can you imagine that moment? I'm sitting there, and it took me all the way back. All the way back to that little child sitting on the side of the bed saying, hello, I asked you this and you told me no. You told me I was wrong. Now you come back after all of this time. And at that time, my dad and I were on the outs again. We were not speaking and hadn't been speaking for a minute. Even though at that time I was living in one of his rental properties, I lived in one of his houses, we still weren't speaking. And he had already moved to Atlanta, so he was no longer living in California. And I was just like, okay, I can't believe that she did this. So a couple of weeks went by, and I was still feeling some kind of way about it. But, you know, with life, you got to keep moving because it will pass you by if you don't. My mother calls me and tells me, oh, I'm just sure of it. He's your dad. I don't know what I was thinking. He's your dad. I'm just sure. So I'm like, okay, whatever. Yeah, whatever. Now I'm still not speaking to my dad. We go maybe 2 years later or so, come tell you, we go into these whole long periods where we weren't speaking. And he was coming into town, and he was going to do a blessing at these people's house. He was going to go pray over their house. And the people asked if I would come and sing. So he called me and asked me if I would go sing. And I was like, okay, you know, I'm fine with that. I'll go do that. And so I met him at my uncle's house. And we got in the car. I drove because he had flew in. So I drove and we were driving. Been in the car. He was resting. And maybe about 30 minutes before we got there, I said, I need to ask you something. I looked over at him and I'm like, we're in a good spot. We're in a good space right now because we're not arguing about anything. So I just need to ask him while I think this is an opportune time. And I said, my mother told me something. And I need to ask you about it. And I really want you to give me a honest answer. And even if you feel like it would hurt me, I still want an honest answer. So I said, my mother told me that you are not my father. And just as fast as I asked the question, he answered. And he said, no, I'm not your father. Your mother and I were not together. But I told her when we got back together, regardless of whatever, I'm still going to raise him as my own child. Now, I'm on the freeway driving. You got to understand, that was a devastating blow. The wind had been knocked out of me because it wasn't like he had to struggle for words. It wasn't like, oh, let me get back to you on that. He just outright came out and said no. And he said, we weren't even together. So, the little child in me, because there's always that inner child in you, was devastated. The adult in me kept it together, even though tears were welled up in my eyes. But I kept it together, and it caused my relationship with my mother to change even more, because we have always had a combative relationship. So I tell people all the time, I ended up with the parents from hell. Neither one basically wanted to be parents. And I was the recipient of two people not wanting to have a child, but have a child. And neither one of them really wants to take care of the child. And neither one of them wants to show love to the child. So, such a winner am I. Such a winner am I. My dad and I went to the house. I sang myself through the tears. So the tears were justified when I was, they didn't know why I was crying, but I purged my heart. And the next day we were having dinner with my uncle, and there were a couple of my dad's friends over, and we were sitting at the table, and the guy asked my dad how many kids he had. And when my dad answered, he said 4. So I looked at my hand and I began to count. And before I could finish the count, he was like 4, but I think there are some others, but I'm not sure. Baby. I was like, okay, wait a minute, 4. I'm stuck at the 4 that you already say you know for sure, because I know that I'm the youngest and I have an older sister and I have an older brother. And I am the youngest. So I'm like 1, 2, 3, 1, my brother. 2, my sister. 3, me. And my dad begins to tell these people, well, his friends, that there's another child and that he's 3 months younger than me. And his name is Arthur Jr. So this young man got my father's name and he's 3 months younger than me. So now, that solidifies everything, because now it puts it into place. My dad was with another woman, just as he stated. My mother said that they broke up. He was in a whole nother relationship. So, technically, that makes me the one that's not the kid. So, I'm telling you, that really does something on your psyche. It really messes your brain up. It puts you into a place of being abandoned when you already felt that way. It just completely took me there. And at the table, I made sure to not change my face. But it's impossible. the guy looked at me, and he was looking at me, and I was really counting my hands up under the table because I really was in shock. And he was like, oh, so have you met him? I said, no, I'm sorry. I never knew he even existed until this day. And so they looked back at my dad, and he was like, yeah, my kids never knew about him, and I don't know where he is. So I tell you, I sat there in utter shock. Utter shock. Time goes on. And I don't know, this was, I can't even remember the exact year that this happened. Went back into this space. We're back in this combative relationship. And we're not speaking again. And I would say it must have been the early part of 2013. Must have been around, no, it was earlier than that. So it was 2012. I had went back to a school district that I had worked at before. And, you know, we all have things happen in life. I had gotten a ticket some years ago, forgot about the ticket. The ticket caused my license to be expired. Suspended, not expired, caused to be suspended. And that means without a suspended license, I can't work. I'm a school bus driver, so I can't work. So I had posted something on my Facebook page. And I was really depressed, and I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? And it was the middle of the month. I'm working at a district where we get paid once a month. So I couldn't even do nothing about it until then. Well, my dad saw my post. He sent me a message, and he was like, I'm getting ready to go back overseas. Whatever it is. And we had an altercation in the email process. And I was like this. And, you know, I'm not going back and forth with you. You don't understand what I'm going through. And he was like, well, you know what? I'm not going to argue with you, but here's what I'm going to do. Whatever the cost is, you tell me the cost. I will pay the cost so that you can get your license and get that done. So went through that. I was able to contact him before he got on the plane. He paid that, got my license restored. And after that, you know, his famous words, you don't ever worry about dialing my number again. Boom, don't dial it, don't do it. And we went back into that phase. Well, 2013 rolled in again. And March of 2013... the little brother that I raised, who was always in my life, took his last breath. And I was devastated. I didn't see myself making it. I didn't want to make it. I didn't want to be here without Robert. How could I be here? He's younger, I'm older, and he's gone. And I didn't want to be here. 2013 rolled in like a steam truck, rolling everything in its way and destroying everything. From 2013 until March of 2014, I lost 11 people, close family, friends that were in my world. My dad died, and then my aunt died, and I was just half suicidal. Because now he's gone. So when I read this article, as I say, it took me back to a place. So many regrets of so many missed times that will never be able to come back. The story with this young man, just a little parallel. He was raised in a white area because of his mother being white. I was raised in a white area because my parents took us and moved us when my parents were together. And my cousin and I were the only two black kids in the entire school at both elementary schools that we attended. So that experience is just so parallel to what this young man has went through. Never forget to say stuff. Because when that person is gone, there's nothing you can say. All you can do is hope and pray that they know your heart. They know that you really care for them. I never hated him. I just kind of felt like we never clicked. Same thing with my mother. We just don't click. I try now to be more, but we're in this space again where we're not talking because of something my mother did. So if I can encourage you, keep fighting. Keep fighting, because tomorrow is not promised. And you could end up in the same situation as this young man ending up in his dad's house, going through his stuff, trying to find out about a person that you thought you knew, and they were totally different than what you thought they were. His father was very political. He didn't know that. Learned something new while searching through the dad's stuff. And because he was always on the side of his mother, who was the white side, he never got to see the black side. So he never spent time with his cousins. And here we are today. That could be my story. Except for I integrated just a little bit more with my cousins on my dad's side. All of them, no. Some, yes. All of them, no. But each day is different for every person. So you make it the best of what you can make it. And don't let 400 years of generational trauma that we all have inherited continue to have you bound. Get it together. That's about all I have for today. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. We must continue to celebrate and stay encouraged. Joe Biden is our new president, whether Donald Trump wants to concede or not, because at the end of the day, he doesn't have to concede. January 20th at 12 noon, Joe Biden will become the new president of the United States. Don't stop voting, people. This is just a hurdle. You got to keep going. We got several more hurdles to go over. So don't stop voting. Georgia, don't give up. We have to turn those two seats. So we need you guys to come back out again on January 5th and vote. In your local elections, people, vote. Put the people in there who is going to represent you. So vote. you know what to do. Share the podcast. Follow me on Twitter, Mr. Chris T. Jones. Follow me on Instagram, Mr. Chris T. Jones Show. I'm out. Have a great day.